The views expressed in this podcast are those of the contributors, not of Q1 Media. You're listening to the Gotcha Movies podcast, the official podcast of GotchaMovies.com. I'm Ryan Oliver.
And I'm Jenny Nolf.
How are you doing on this Sunday afternoon?
Well, it's pretty lazy today. I'm going to watch some movies later and read.
Nice. That's basically been the gist of my weekend, too. Just been watching movies and TV shows and getting caught up. So, I don't know. Is there anything interesting you've been checking out lately?
Well, I've been catching up on The Mindy Project, and I love that show. And then I've been watching movies for the 13 Instant Nights of Halloween series we'll be doing.
Nice. I've been doing that as well. I watched Reanimator again last night, and that movie is awesome. I forgot how awesome it was.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one. I've only seen Bride of Reanimator.
Oh, so. I actually have not seen that one, so.
But so we're like opposites.
Yeah, we can't offer perspectives on each other film, but yeah, Reanimator is on Netflix, and yeah, well, that'll be one of the instant nights tomorrow, I believe, or whenever this episode drops, which will probably be that day. So yeah, check it out. For me, more importantly than anything I've caught up with recently, I finally got to see The Guest. That's probably the biggest deal for me.
I really liked The Guest. It's so much fun. I really want to see it again.
I loved it. Like, I think that's a top 10 of the year contender for me. Like, I was really had a good time with that movie. It was kind of sad that only, like, three people were in the theater when I watched it, but
that makes me sad, too.
But at the same time, it's like, it took forever to get to Portland, though. Like, it just opened last weekend, and it's been out since September in limited release. So that was quite a long time for it to make it there. So it's understandable. But at the same time, I had a great time with it. I also felt, I was hoping the other two people in the theater didn't think I was a sociopath, because I found myself laughing at moments that I thought were funny, but maybe they didn't think were funny.
Oh, no, the movie is meant to be funny, so maybe. And it is a certain humor you have to have if, like, you like those types of movies. Like, it does have a lot of horror, like, slasher elements, and also, like, just 80s thrillers in general.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like, people have been throwing out Terminator, which is very obvious, and same with Halloween, which I think in the score, definitely, and the just unstoppable force of the character played by Dan Stevens.
The last scene. It's so Halloween.
Oh, yes. The last scene is so amazingly Halloween. And a little bit Terminator, too. I think out of context, this isn't a spoiler, but when he gives a thumbs up, it's like totally, totally Terminator 2 moment. It was pretty awesome. So.
Oh. I never thought of that. I know which scene you're talking about in Terminator, but I've never seen it. Any of them. I know.
Gasp.
Arnold Schwarzenegger and me, I don't watch his movies.
I think you would love the first two Terminators, though. I probably would.
It's just, they're very low on my list right now.
Mm-hmm. And they're not only their Schwarzenegger's best performances, but they're two of James Cameron's best films, too. So, yeah.
Oh, well, then, yeah. That might be an easy thing, though.
Yeah, very, very true. So, and I think the other thing I really caught up with, I finally watched Obvious Child, and I liked it.
I like that movie.
Yeah, it was cute. Like, I wanted to see it in theater, and I just, for some reason, never got a chance to do it. So, finally got to see it on DVD, and yeah, I really liked it. Really liked Jenny Slate, so I'm glad she got a lead performance, because the only thing I've ever seen her in prior to this was Parks and Rec.
I like her, too. I actually think that she's the only reason that I really, like, enjoyed that movie. Otherwise, it's just, like, it's a very basic rom-com, but I think her character and her, I guess, comedic sense of style made it a little bit more enjoyable than cliche-y.
Right, and I think, too, like, at almost every corner, it could have gone, like, the typical rom-com route, and I think it does overall, but, like, I feel like it goes left every time that it could go right, and I really, really appreciated that.
Yeah, it's a very fun, very light, nice movie.
Yeah, it was a pleasant movie to watch after, you know, in between binge-watching The Walking Dead, so it was a nice little break from zombie deaths. So, anyway, later on the show, Taylor and Jonathan will join us for our review of Fury, but before that happens, we have a movie that we have to review that we both saw and really did not do well this weekend in its nationwide expansion.
I didn't even realize it had a nationwide expansion. Oh, that makes me sound horrible.
Oh, yeah. It expanded nationwide this weekend, which is men, women, and children.
Donna, why don't you tell us what brought you here tonight?
Thanks. Well, my daughter is getting to an age where she's starting to develop. And, you know, I was just wondering what the laws were about what you can and can't post on the internet.
In our state, the laws are far more lenient than they should be.
They are?
Yeah. If someone is sending photos to your daughter...
Yes, but I'm also actually wondering about if she were to send her own.
Oh, I see.
Like, if she were to take a picture of herself in a bathing suit.
Before you go, I want to give you a pamphlet about the dangers of selfies.
Great.
Yeah, the film actually grossed less in 608 theaters than Birdman did in 4 theaters. So,
to be fair, Birdman has had a lot of hype behind it.
And is made by, like, a great filmmaker, which, not that Jason Reitman isn't. He's done some good films in the past, films that we have praised, maybe not on the show, but definitely, like, off the cuff. We've both been big fans of Young Adult.
Yeah, it's definitely my favorite of his, I think.
Mine too. And we've also championed Up in the Air and Thank You for Smoking. We also both agree that we have disowned Juno in the years since it came out. Yeah. So.
And I still have my poster of Juno in my room. It's so hard to put down because I have a collage of things.
So it's just there and you see it now and you're like, oh man, why are you still there? So basically this film is an American mosaic piece. It's an ensemble dramedy basically about like what it's like to date or have like sexual relationships in the digital age. It's got a huge ensemble. Like Adam Sandler, Rosemary DeWitt, Ansel Elgort, Judy Greer, Dean Norris from Breaking Bad. I mean, the list goes on. I guess we know how each other are coming from this movie, but at least for audiences, what did you think overall about this movie?
Oh, sorry. I liked it overall, and I think we've talked about this, but I liked a lot of the performances, and I feel like that kind of elevated what the movie was going for, and. I mean, again, it's an ensemble, and it's really hard, and I can nitpick at certain stories, and I have, but, like, there are some stories that just really resonated with me that I felt very connected with, two in particular, which were in the high school ones, the one with the anorexic girl, and then the one with Ansel Elgort's character in with the World of Warcraft, actually, it's game, what is it?
Guild Wars, I believe, is the game. Yeah.
Guild Wars, addiction, and I connected with those two stories very closely. But, like, then there are other stories, like, one with Adam Sandler and Rosemary DeWitt, which is about, like, this couple who cheats on another. I didn't really care for, and it felt like it slowed down the pace of the movie. Also, we both agree that the voiceover is horrible in the movie, oof. And the satellite, like, metaphor is really gimmicky and boring.
It's so bad. At least that aspect of the movie is the one part of the movie that I agree. We both are on the same page. It is terrible. Emma Thompson gives a voiceover dialogue that's just completely unnecessary. And then the satellite, when it happened to Jennifer Garner's character, like, she was worried about her daughter, who's played by Caitlin... you should look up.
She's the girl from Short Term 12.
Right. She's also in Leggies, Lynn Shelton's new film, and she's very, very good in that as well. Caitlin Dever, that's her name. So, like, Jennifer Garner plays her mother, who's very, like, she checks her daughter's Facebook page and her email and, like, everything to make sure that there's no internet predators out there to get her. Yet she lets her go out. In the world where there would probably be more likely something bad to happen, which I thought was really, really strange. But then there's like a blip of the satellite. I forgot the name of the satellite, but it's like the first one that made telecommunications possible. So it's like shows very heavy-handedly that it's got a control over everything. And it really did not like that at all.
Yeah, it was just really weird. And I felt like at one point, like, every time they would, like, cut back to the satellite and do the stupid metaphor, I would just zone out and be like, when can I get back to the movie? Because this is, as far as I was concerned, that satellite had nothing to do with the movie that he was presenting.
No, there's definitely some total inconsistencies with this movie, but I'm with you that the performances are what make this movie even like remotely watchable. I'm not as hard on it as I was when I believe I texted you after the movie and said some not nice things about the movie. The more I thought about it, I was like, you know what? This isn't a bad movie, and I don't want to get up in arms about it because I don't want to give this movie that kind of power, because I don't think this is a movie to like really get pissed off at. I think it's got interesting ideas, and I think these things have happened. Like, I mean, there's a possibility of all these things happening, but I feel like it's just a series of worst case scenarios, and that.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, it's like this is the worst possible thing that can happen. And I kind of felt the same way. Like, maybe this is a movie, it doesn't make it like a good cinematic movie, but maybe this is a movie that they should show in high schools from now on. Like, I think it might be a good movie to show to kids. It's interesting. Oh, go ahead.
I totally agree with that point. And I was at a Q&A with Jason Reitman there, and I also did an interview with him then after, but he kind of said that there are a lot of parents in the audience, and he's like, I'm sorry if you have children,
Oh,
because it's very heavy-handed on the fact that like it is true, kids do go through stuff like this. Like, I have brothers that are in high school, and me and you were in high school at like the dawn of like, I guess, the digital age or whatever.
I was actually going to make that point at some point. I feel like we're like, it's interesting that you were like, you felt some of the stories relatable, which is fine. I could not relate to any of these stories because I felt like you and I are in that generation that's like in between. We're obviously not like as old as the Rosemary DeWitt and Adam Sandler characters, but we're outside of high school in that this current moment. So I'm like, I don't know, like, I just don't understand it, basically. Not that I don't understand, I just can't relate to it.
Oh, that's totally fine. That also makes kind of sense, which is why I said I wasn't sure if you felt this way. But like, I felt like not with like the whole like texting stuff like that. Like, obviously, like that was a very, really heavy thing in the movie. But like with the girl who had an alter ego on like Tumblr. I mean, like in my high school, that would have been like MySpace, and I had friends that had alter egos on MySpace, and then
Good old MySpace.
right. And then I actually felt like the anorexic girl storyline had nothing to do with the digital like age, and more so about like girls in high school who have body issues,
I agree
and
with you,
definitely connected with her.
like barely to do with like online, I'll give you that. Like, she checks a blog about like, you know, what is it, like put down the fork or something like that.
It has some horrible name. I
Yeah,
was like,
it's really bad. Like, yeah,
yeah.
like it's in a similar vein of what I just said. Like, it's terrible.
Oh, it was like, fuck yeah, skinny girls or something like that.
Yeah. Ugh, yeah.
But basically, like, aside from the blog and the fact that she's introduced texting to a friend about another friend literally right in front of that person.
Oh yeah, which was kind of a comical scene, I have to say.
I liked that scene a lot. It was very smartly done.
Yeah, it was one of the very few moments that I felt like was smart and like not as bashing you over the head with its message.
Right. And I feel like it does have a lot of that, especially when the satellite comes in. I'm like, dear God.
Oh,
But
yes.
I do like you said, your point, like showing it to people in high school, I felt like it's kind of like Lifetime movie-y, but it's not a bad Lifetime movie
It's like a
in
well-made Lifetime movie. Like technically, and like this is better than any Lifetime movie that I've stumbled across flipping through channels. I can never say I've sat down and watched a Lifetime movie, so I wouldn't know.
One of my first initial reactions was like, this is Glee, but to the sad extreme.
I've never really watched Glee either. I watched one
But
episode, and yeah, I can understand what you're saying though.
like definitely kind of has that like TV quality to it.
Yes, absolutely. It's almost like episodic in the way. This could have been like a good miniseries, maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah, but maybe not. But yeah, as a
But no, yeah,
movie,
definitely performances save it.
yeah, it makes it even remotely watchable. Like, that's, I think, I really like Ansel Elgort and Caitlin Dever in it. I like Dean Norris a lot too. I thought he was really, really strong in it. Nice to see him in a film role outside of Breaking Bad. And
Yeah, like some too.
Judy Greer too. Like, even though I didn't like what her character was doing, I thought she was really great in the movie, like playing that character.
I thought her character was interesting. I wouldn't say I liked her character at all, but like I thought it was interesting how she realized what she was doing was wrong, but she kept doing it anyway.
Yeah, I feel like she was the more complicated character of anybody in the movie. Maybe not anybody, but, like, she was one of the more complex characters.
Yeah, she's one of the more interesting ones, for sure. But I definitely agree. Ansel Elgort, like, he blows me out of the water, like, every time I see him. Love him.
Yeah, I know you love him. He's definitely good. I mean, I unfortunately had to watch The Fault in Our Stars again for my other podcast and just wanted to, like, gouge my eyes out. But, you know, he makes that movie even, like, somewhat tolerable.
He's like the most charming person on this planet, as far as I'm concerned.
And it's funny, I think I had said something to the effect of, like, what's he in, like, 4 movies? And I was kind of, like, being sarcastic, and he really only has been in 4 movies. It was right.
Yeah, he was found for Carrie. Mm-hmm. Like, he was actually discovered, and then I guess he went on to Divergent, Fault in Our Stars, and then. But at the time when he was cast for Men, Women, and Children, he had not been in Divergent or The Fault in Our Stars yet. He had only been in Carrie, which is a very small role.
Mm-hmm. Which I've not seen yet.
Unless you're me. Oh, you haven't seen it? Oh, no. Unless you're me. And I watched it at a drive-in, and, like, he came on screen. He plays, I guess, John Travolta's character from the original one.
Oh, okay.
The guy who asks the girl to prom.
Mm-hmm.
Is that John Travolta's character?
It is. John Travolta's the one who ends up going to prom. Wait, is it? I don't remember.
I don't remember.
Actually, I don't think it is. I think John Travolta was the dick, guy character.
Then he was the one that helped the girlfriend. I don't. This is really horrible. I haven't seen that movie in a very long time.
I haven't either. Like, I feel really, really bad about that. But I don't think it was John Travolta. Because I remember, because he's, like, nowadays, he's, like, second billed in the movie. Like, whenever you find the movie on DVD or Blu-ray. But, like, he's not in the movie very long. He's barely in it.
He is the guy that asks her to prom. I'm totally right then.
Okay, good call.
That's the guy who's not in the movie for a very long time.
So Ansel Elgort
is... If I'm totally wrong, anyone can sound off in comments or whatever. But, So Ansel Elgort plays, his name's Tommy Ross, and he plays the guy that asks Carrie to prom, and he's just, there's just this charming aspect about him, and, like, when he got on screen, I looked to my boyfriend, who I saw it with, and I was just like, who is this guy? Where did he come from? Why is he, like, the nicest person on the planet that I have ever seen? I genuinely liked him in the movie, and it was so hard to hate him.
Mm-hmm. That makes it, which you're supposed to, because that's when shit goes down.
You're supposed, I mean, he has nothing to do with it in the long run, but, like, you're supposed to not really like him either, because it's like, oh, he's just asking Carrie to prom to appease his girlfriend.
Right.
But at the same time, he's like this nice guy. It's so hard to hate him.
Yeah, no, he's definitely, like, yeah, he's a charming guy. Even in a movie that, like, I hate, it's hard to hate him in it, so... No, definitely. And, like, again, there's decent performances. I wouldn't recommend this movie, and which is okay because nobody seems to care about it anyway since it's not doing well in the box office. But there are, you know, enough good stuff in it. I just think it's way too heavy-handed, and it's not, like, to the it's not to the over-the-top point of being satirical to really register with me. It's just kind of a, like, whatever movie. And again, I feel so far removed from the process of what these kids go through. Cause, like, I didn't have a Facebook till, like, halfway through my senior year of high school. I didn't have a smartphone till I was 22. So I'm like, I really don't, like, you know, I'm not with this movie in terms of that level.
Yeah. Well, I also feel like, and this movie is very similar to another movie called Disconnect, which I felt the same way. It's like, I walked out of it. I was like, you know, that was really interesting and I didn't hate it, but I also wouldn't revisit it. And I wouldn't ever go out of my way to be like, you need to watch this movie because it's awesome. Instead, I would probably just suggest Young Adult still.
Yes, I would, or Up in the Air, or Thank You for Smoking.
Cause I feel like, I mean, I haven't seen Labor Day, but Men, Women, and Children is definitely my least favorite Reitman film I've seen. But that's not saying it's bad.
Mm-hmm. It might be my least favorite, too, despite the fact that I wasn't a big fan of Labor Day. Because Labor Day, at least, like, it wasn't a good movie, but it felt like it was a swing and a miss. Like, he was trying to do something different. And Men, Women, and Children, he kind of resorted back to what he was good at and didn't do the best he had with it. So it's kind of disappointing on that level.
Yeah. Oh, would say so. Like, I just felt like he just has such a stronger filmography than this movie.
Mm-hmm. And I think he'll bounce back from it, definitely. So I don't know what inclined him to make this particular movie.
He read the book and liked it a lot.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense. But, you know, that sucks for him. Two dud movies to come out in the same year, so.
Yeah, poor guy.
Yeah, he'll bounce back. He's a talented filmmaker. He's got plenty of good films to his name, so he'll make it. Hopefully people will rediscover Young Adult, because that movie wasn't super successful either.
No, it wasn't. I strongly stand by it being one of his best, especially, like, if you watch it the first time, you don't know if you like it, because the big reveal at the end, but then after you watch it, once that big reveal happens, and you watch it again, thinking about that reveal, the movie, it just elevates, and you see, like, everything matters, and it's just really, really good work.
It is. I wanted to watch it again before we recorded this episode, but I did not
get a chance to. But it's not on Netflix Instant anymore. They took it down.
No, but I found a used copy at Suncoast for, like, $3.99. So, listeners, it's out there and easy to find and really cheap. So, we recommend it.
So good.
So good.
So smart.
What we're doing here is a righteous act, gentlemen.
You hear me, Gordo?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a Bible verse I think about sometimes. Many times. It goes, "Then I heard the voice of the Lord saying, whom shall I send? And who will go for us?" And I said, "Here am I. Send me."
Book of Isaiah, chapter 6.
All right, so now we're joined by Taylor Dvorsky. How are you doing, man?
I'm good. I just got off work.
Ah, fun stuff. Good to be off, though, right?
Great.
And Jonathan Romo, how are you doing as well?
I'm doing spectacular. I'm pretty sure I've slept all but 2 hours today, and it's 3:00.
Oh, yeah. Well, you just had a birthday. You're 21st, right?
Yep.
How did that go?
Pretty great, as told by the fact that I've been sleeping for all but 2 hours of the day.
Yep, that sounds like a good 21st to me. So you guys are joining us to talk about Fury. Which is the new film from David Ayer, who did End of Watch. And so, I guess, what are your guys' initial thoughts on it? Jenny, why don't we start with you?
I love this movie. I think it might be my favorite movie of the fall so far, which is saying something because I really liked Gone Girl.
I was about to say, that's impressive. I really love this movie as well, but I don't know if I'd pick it over Gone Girl, but good. I don't know. Taylor, what about you?
Okay, I didn't love it. I did.
I'm not invited to this podcast anymore. You can go.
Okay. It was good. It's a good movie, and I did really like it. I just don't think. I don't know how to say this. Not that I hated it. I thought it was a really good movie. I'm just coming off two people who said they loved it. I thought it was a bit long and kind of slow to start, but I still thought like it was a really good character piece, and I thought that he really captured like just the horrors of war incredibly well.
All right. And Jonathan?
I liked it more initially than I do right now, is the best way I can put it.
Interesting. Did it just not have a long-lasting impression?
See, I haven't been to a draft house in a while, which is where I saw it. And so when the movie first started, it looked a lot better than the average AMC. I don't know why. Maybe it said 4K stuff beforehand. And for some reason, it just all looked better. Mm. And I really enjoyed what it was doing throughout the movie, and I was like, I loved it. Shia was my favorite part, and just the whole. And I don't watch many war movies either, so I didn't have anything.
Well, I don't watch very many war movies either; they're not my favorite.
Yeah, I'm not big on them either. And so I initially liked it, and I was talking with Taylor about it and the other people we went to go see it with, and it just seems like as I'm like sitting on it was good. It was really good. It just. I'd probably say like 3.5 or 4 out of 5, probably where I'm sitting. And I'd rather see Gone Girl again than see Fury again, is the way I'm thinking about it.
All right, well, that's fair enough. I watched Gone Girl a second time, as we discussed last week, but I definitely look forward to seeing Fury a second time, which I haven't got a chance to do yet, but we'll definitely do again. So it looks like we have varying degrees of love or like. So maybe we should just dive into the story of the movie and then just hash it out, I guess. So it takes place during the final days of World War II, and it follows a tank... I don't really watch that many
battalion.
World movies. Battalion, yes, thank you. I was trying to think of the right terminology. Follows a tank battalion led by Brad Pitt's character, War Daddy. And that's, the lifespan of a tank during World War II was only like a couple months, or maybe even like weeks. It was not a very long lifespan. And this group had been together for 4 years. And so it's Brad Pitt, it's Shia LaBeouf, John Bernthal from The Walking Dead, Michael Pena, and Logan Lerman, who's like the new recruit who joins their group. So he's kind of our like entry point into this movie, basically.
Charlie goes to war.
he's our entry point because we don't know anything about this group. So we're just like we're shoveled into the war. We're shoveled into this group, and it's a very visceral movie. Like, the story is slight, but it's just an intense, immersive film. At least I thought so. I don't know about you guys.
No, I agree with the visceral element. Like I said, that's what I thought was one of the strongest parts of it. It's just that the war scenes were really immersive and very engaging. Like I said, my main complaints with it were just I thought it was kind of slow to start. It took a little bit to get going, and I maybe thought it ran a bit too long. It was like 2:15, correct?
Yeah.
So I thought it was a bit over long, but no, but the war sequences and the war elements were, I mean, it probably wasn't like pleasant to watch because it is a pretty graphic film,
mm-hmm.
but I think David Ayer did a really good job with it.
It's interesting that you thought it was slow, which is totally fine, but like I felt this movie was paced really well. It did not feel like it was 2 hours and 15 minutes to me. Like, I felt like it flew by.
I really liked the pacing too. I thought it was really paced. Yeah.
And I think it's interesting, too, because that's usually my complaint about almost every movie. I don't want to spend that long in the theater. It's usually my only complaint, and I didn't notice it this time.
Well, then you're not going to be on the Interstellar podcast, then. No, I'm kidding.
I'm looking forward to that movie, probably not as much as everyone else, because I don't care about movies that I already know are going to be great.
You never know, though. Whoa.
Is that weird to say?
A little bit, yeah. You never know.
Maybe you shouldn't say you don't care about movies. Like, you're just not like...
I'm not excited, I think is the way to put it. Because I already... I'm pretty good at telling exactly how I'm going to feel coming out of a movie. And so I look more forward to...
And there's a word for that. It's called jaded.
Probably. I think it's... I'm a good predictor. I don't know. I'm not like super excited about Interstellar. It's my least excited movie. It's my movie that I'm least excited about because I already know it's going to be great in my head. Like I just know. I could be proven wrong and then I'm disappointed, but I'd rather that not be the case.
So back to Fury.
Okay. Yeah, we should probably segue back onto the movie we're discussing. But anyway, you felt that it was maybe a little tad too long, Jonathan?
No, I actually thought it was.
I'm the only one who thought it was apparently just kind of. I just thought it was a bit long. Yeah, that was. I'm the only one who had complaints with the length. I don't think it was too long. I just thought maybe some of the scenes felt a little bit extended. Mainly like the scene in the German village. The whole scene with the what's her Emma, that girl.
You're talking about the apartment.
Yeah. You mean
I thought that scene was a bit, I don't know, by the end of it, I was kind of tired of being in that location.
You mean the best scene in the movie?
That's what I
was
thinking.
Yeah, I love that.
I know, everyone, I liked it until, I just thought it was a bit too long. I don't know, I feel like I'm in the minority here, which is weird, because I don't like this, because it makes it sound like I'm shitting on this movie that I still really liked.
No, we understand, man, you liked this movie, it's understandable. It's kind of like, we'll get back to that scene in a second because I think there's a lot to discuss there, but it's kind of like I'm not gonna name this particular site, but there's a site that I do love that has been kind of picking on this movie about it being like not an awards contender, And which is like, maybe it's not going to be, it will be in like every technical regard. That's like a given. But like in terms of
it's so good.
Oh yeah, the score is phenomenal. The special effects, the cinematography. Yeah, we'll get into that further. But like, you're like validating my point, Taylor, and I like that because people are like, oh, you know, why this is why Fury's not an Oscar contender, and I'm like, does it have to be? It can just be an entertaining adult movie, which is kind of what you see the movie as, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Like I remember it was getting some Oscar buzz, but like when I saw the reviews, like maybe weren't quite that level. I wasn't like, oh god, like, you know, I wasn't sure. I mean, I didn't know if like David Ayer was ever really going to be an Oscar caliber filmmaker, but he can make entertaining films.
Yeah, for me, like End of Watch, I love that movie. Like that was in my top 10 the year that it came out.
I did really like End of Watch. I didn't see Sabotage.
You're not really missing much, unfortunately. He's still a really, like, technically astute filmmaker, as Jenny mentioned.
He's a visual director.
Yeah, Sabotage looks really good, but it's just kind of a lame, like, whodunit sort of deal. And, like, but he's still, like, one of his strengths is, like, not only technical aspect, but, like, the guy can write, like, tough guy dialogue better than anybody, I think, as evident by End of Watch and Fury and Sabotage and Training Day as well, because he wrote it.
Are you talking about the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie?
Sabotage, yes. This director did do Sabotage that came out earlier this year.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not very... Fury actually made more this opening weekend than Sabotage did in its entire run. So that should go to tell you right there. But anyway, we should move back to that scene, because I think there's a lot to discuss there. Maybe why we feel one way or another about it. So there's a scene in the movie where they do, like, they take over a German village and they're kind of, they go into this apartment, Brad Pitt does, and he brings in Logan Lerman's character, to basically kind of warm him up a bit because he's having trouble because he can't kill. He's hardly been in the war. He was like, was he like a mailroom clerk? He was something. I forgot what it was.
He could type 60 words a minute.
Yes, that's right. He could type faster than he could load a gun, basically. Yeah. So they go to this village and they go into this apartment, and it's a phenomenal scene because I feel like it shows everything you need to know about characters without being overly expositional.
Yes.
Yeah.
I really love that scene. I liked how you learned so much about these characters without having them outright say things.
Yes, agreed.
Like, this is who I am. This is what I do.
And that's what, I mean, that's what David Ayer is so good about doing. Like, not as much, like, I would say that even better in this movie than End of Watch, a movie that I love, because, like, it still had the kind of, like, found footage gimmick. Which I think worked well in that movie than it did most horror movies nowadays. But at the same time, like, there were definitely a little bit of, like, expositional stuff, things that had to be explained, where here it's like there's a scene where, like, Brad Pitt takes his shirt off and, like, you just see burn marks all over his back. And it's like, you know, you didn't have to say that it's like, oh yeah, I was in a battle. Oh, I've seen how hellish war can be. Just, you see what happened to him. And it's like, there's not a line of spoken dialogue about it.
Right. And I also like, towards the end of the dinner scene where it's like, you see like these two guys and they're having like a kind of a pleasant time with these women. And then the rest of their troop comes in and they kind of felt left out, and therefore they kind of ruin the moment that they're having. And it's very interesting to see all these characters come into play, and you see like where they stand. Because even like Shia's character, who's he's Bible like loving, he gets really horrible in that scene because he's kind of jealous of what these two went off and started doing without them.
He gets horrible in a way that's kind of subtle, because he's just like, he's almost like just giving him a glare. He's not as like outright obnoxious as John Bernthal's character is.
But, and then he's letting John Bernthal's character like do this stuff when he knows he could step up and like stand up for the other people.
That's what I was about to say. His inaction speaks a lot more than any other action.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It's very, very just, yeah, it's such a well-constructed scene that like, it's like, I feel like that scene to me, you know, maybe you feel the same way, maybe it doesn't. I feel like it like, cause I'm a little bit with you, Taylor, and that I thought the movie started a little slow. But I feel like that scene made everything made everything that I was, like, maybe on the fence about in the first 30, 45 minutes about the movie, like, go away. And I was finally, like, sucked in and immersed in this movie. And that's kind of why I want to see it again, because then I'll know how the characters are going in the beginning of the movie, and it probably will make it more powerful.
I also think that scene in general just makes the movie a lot more personal than a lot of other war movies you see. Like, it just felt very close-knit and personal. Also the fact that they're in a tank, but it just had this, like, intimacy in that scene that made the movie really work.
And the scenes in the tank itself are, like, really, really incredible and claustrophobic. Like, I'm just impressed how they got those shots, and especially because they shot on film, so they definitely had a much bigger camera setup. I mean, I'm sure they probably hollowed out a side of it and did it that way, but, like, those scenes really, really impressed me, too.
Yeah, no, I thought that was really impressive how they cut the action in the tank as well. Like, mm-hmm. really, really, really close up, really, really fast, kind of made you, like, feel like you couldn't breathe.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Other thing, like, again, not to harp on, like, some of the criticisms that other people have given this movie, but there's been unnecessary comparisons to Inglourious Basterds just because it's a World War II set movie that stars Brad Pitt, and that's the only, like, bare minimum comparisons. Like, one of them is a complete and utter, like, revenge fantasy, like, and this one's a hard-hitting war movie. It doesn't make sense to me that is going on.
It doesn't make sense to me either. I was actually talking to my neighbor yesterday at work, or 2 days ago at work, about it. I was like, it doesn't make sense how some reviewers are like, well, this is like Inglourious Basterds. And I'm like, no, even Brad Pitt's character isn't the same, because he's more comedic in Inglourious Basterds, and he's kind of like crazy. And in this movie, he definitely has like this kind of like dangerous element to him, but he's also very mentor-esque.
Yeah, it's not even remotely. Like, I stand second to no one in my love for Inglourious Basterds. Like, I love that movie. Yeah, but it is, like, not even remotely close to being comparable.
So. It's like comparing, like, oh, well, this is what The Godfather is, and then this is what, I don't know, Kill Bill is, and obviously Godfather's the better movie.
right. Maybe like, something like that.
Like, what?
Or maybe, like, Godfather and, like, I don't know, like Training Day, maybe even like a David Ayer like movie. It's like those aren't even comparable. Like, how do you like? It's like that. It really is like that. I agree. That's a good analogy.
I think so. Like, it's just, yeah, Brad Pitt's like really the only thing that those movies have in common, and the setting.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely,
and like the time period setting, not the actual setting.
Right. No, totally. And then Jonathan, you mentioned that Shia LaBeouf was your favorite part of the movie. Like, he's really good in this movie, have to say.
Yeah, I know in the trailers I had a problem just kind of, like, laughing at him. Mm-hmm. Not at his character, just, like, him.
I just laugh at Shia a lot.
Yeah, him and his life are kind of funny, but the most interesting thing about war movies to me is this balance between the religious characters and just how they deal with it. And I just thought, that's why I like his character the most. I think it's an interesting conflict, an inner conflict for a character like that, because you have to convince yourself that you're doing right.
Yes.
Even though, like, it's still, I don't know.
Absolutely, because a lot of, maybe not, like, you know, not, like, great war movies like Apocalypse Now or Saving Private Ryan or Thin Red Line, like, you know, some of the, maybe, like, a lesser movie, like, We Were Soldiers or Wind Talkers, like, you'll have a religious character who's very, like, caricature-ish. It's, like, the stereotypical, like, fire and brimstone, like, preacher-type character. Yep. And Shia's is just, it's much more subtle and much more, going on. Absolutely.
Yeah, I definitely liked his character, and I do think he is a good actor. I know he is crazy in real life, but, man, apparently when he is filming on set, because apparently he knocked out his tooth for this role,
yep.
I'm not sure, and didn't bathe, but mm-hmm. he's really great in Fury. So good.
It's a pretty grimy set. Like, I've heard that this was, like, a tough shoot, because, like, people did not bathe, and they were just, like, they look like they just came back from a war in this movie. Like, it feels that authentic.
Yeah, no, it's really well shot and well set up. Definitely A+ on cinematography.
Yes, absolutely. Again, it was shot on film. This is...
Who shot it?
I'll have to look up his name. He's a Russian cinematographer, somebody who I was not familiar with, but we should get familiar with him because he's very, very good at what he does, apparently. Roman Vazyanov is the guy who shot it.
He shot End of Watch
yep, as well. He shot End of Watch as well. And he shot a movie called Charlie Countryman that Shia LaBeouf was in.
I think it's on Netflix.
Oh, yeah. It is that on movie Netflix. Looked really pretty, too.
Yeah. So I have been reluctant to see it because I am not a fan of Shia LaBeouf. I do not think he's that good of an actor. I think this is his best performance by far, though, for sure.
He's terrible in Nymphomaniac.
I think
Transformers.
Well,
I haven't seen Nymphomaniac, and I will not see Nymphomaniac.
Well, he just does this awful Cockney English accent. That's bad.
And for me, the problems of Nymphomaniac are so far beyond Shia LaBeouf's performance that I didn't even really notice. But that's just me. And yeah, I think Jonathan mentioned something about Transformers. That's like bottom of the barrel right there. So, and
Jonathan mentioned that he actually likes the first one.
Oh, did you like the first? Sorry.
I think I was 13 at the time. So yes, I was just like, me. Blow explosions. Those are cool.
I liked Shia and Lawless. I thought he was good in Lawless.
No, not for me. I did not like that movie that much at all.
I also really loved the Even Stevens movie. That was a good one.
Even Stevens.
I never watched it, so.
There you go.
I never watched Even Stevens. Holes, I'm sure he's fine in.
Holes is great.
But I'm like, he is not Stanley Yelnats to me, though. There's no way. I just don't buy that. But, there was one other movie. Oh,
I love Disturbia, guys. I love that movie.
I like it, too.
It's so much fun. It is what it is. It's not supposed to be great.
It's better than Eagle Eye, if we're going down DJ Caruso's
Eagle Eye is bad. Also, I just looked up, like, a photo of him from, like, I think one of the Fury premieres, and he's rocking a beard, and it looks ridiculous.
Oh, my God.
At least it's not in brown paper bags.
But I think...
I'm not famous anymore.
I think his most depressing, like, role, or, like, the most depressing movie, it's not the worst one, but is Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. I hate that movie, like, so much, and...
I like that movie.
No.
Aliens.
Oh, God,
Kingdom of the Crystal Skull is real bad.
I feel like in the comment, like, not the comment section, but on the photo section of this podcast, I'm going to put the Ancient Aliens guy on there and just put, like, I'm just going to put Jenny's face over the Ancient Aliens guy and just, yeah, that's going to be it. But anyway, we should get off the Shia LaBeouf tangent and get back to Fury. But yes, gorgeous cinematography, The Score by Stephen Price.
Oh my God, it's amazing.
It's really, really well done. I don't like it as much as his Gravity score, but it's still really, really good.
I didn't like Gravity that much, so I guess I like the Gravity score more than I do the movie. But I really, really love the songs Emma, or the pieces, I guess, Emma and Norman on the soundtrack, which they're very similar. They have, like, the theme of the movie running through them, but I think they're so beautiful.
Yeah, I'm going to listen to it. It is on Spotify, as Jenny let me know, so I'm going to have to listen to that.
Yes, I'm listening to it all week.
Yes, the reason I have not listened to it is because I haven't stopped listening to the guest soundtrack. That's the only reason I have not listened to it.
That is such a good soundtrack.
Yes, it is. So, but I will get on that Fury soundtrack for sure.
Wait, did you finally see the guest?
Oh, yeah. Oh, sorry, we had talked about that at the beginning of the episode, but I did finally see it, and I absolutely loved it. And it's definitely a top 10 contender for me, as I told Jenny. I loved it.
I want to see it so bad.
I want to see it again. It is great. And you guys
still playing in Austin?
You guys are both right. I liked it better than Your Next. So
Yeah. It's a better movie.
It is a better movie. Like, Your Next is fun, but, like, The Guest, holy shit.
It's a better movie.
Yeah, it's such a, like, up leap in quality. So yeah, look forward to seeing what those guys do next. But anyway, sound editing in Fury. Amazingly done. Special effect. Yeah, the final battle scene in this movie is probably the best action scene of the year for me. It's incredible. Like, as much as I loved Snowpiercer, like, I think that beats any of the action set pieces from that movie.
I agree. And I love Snowpiercer. But back to the sound editing, it's unreal how, like, I wouldn't say intricate, but just, like, very smart it's done. Like, I think I mentioned this scene in my review, and I've talked about it with you, but, like, when this group of SS battalion, like, Nazis are, like, marching towards the tankmen crew, there's, like, they're singing, like, this sort of upbeat, like, chant. And they have this, like, the score underneath is, like, really eerie, very, like, slow.
It's very layered.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. And then it's just the layers and the sound editing is so smart.
Oh, it's great. Well, because that scene, it's like you have the, like, low chant because you have Logan Lerman listening to them out in the distance. You have the low chant under, like, an unnerving score with the sound of, like, just the wind blowing and, like, almost the sounds of, like, negative silence. And it's, yeah, it's really impressive. This is a really, really outstanding movie, technically, and well acted. And like, as much as I love End of Watch, I might even go as far as to say this is David Ayer's finest achievement as a filmmaker.
I don't care. I want it to be like best technical everything at the Oscars, at least nominated right now. It's total crime.
Yeah, I think this and Dawn of the Planet of the Apes are the two most technical astute movies to come out this year by far. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Let's go!
Well, one of our biggest news articles on the site this week was the Why Don't You Play in Hell trailer, which is Sion, or Shion, however you pronounce it, Sono's latest movie that's coming out on Blu-ray. Drafthouse Films has picked it up. I have seen it twice. And I love this movie, and I highly recommend anyone going to see it. The trailer is wacky, and if you watch the trailer, it's a little bit spoilerish, because it shows a lot from the third act. But the movie is great. It has a lot of very Sono elements to it, which if you haven't seen a movie of his, one of his best ones is Suicide Club. He also did this four-hour epic, which Jonathan and Taylor would probably hate because it's 4 hours, called Love Exposure. And he's very weird. He's very, like, politically, I wouldn't say, like, he has a very, like, hard political front and stance in his movies. And it's because he grew up in Japan, which is a very wacko culture. And a lot of, with Why Don't You Play in Hell, it, like, blends Yakuza with, like, gory Japanese cinema. It's brilliant. And that's my bit.
Well,
it was our biggest news article this week, which is good because that means people are watching the trailer.
I'll have to check out the film at some point. I'm not familiar with this filmmaker, so I'm going to have to get acquainted with him.
He is really interesting, and his films need to be seen more than once, even though they're very long.
I'll have to give it a shot. I will do that. And hopefully our listeners will do that too, since apparently you guys are watching the Why Don't You Play in Hell trailer. So check it out. Another big news story this week, Neil Patrick Harris has been tapped to host the Academy Awards, which all I have to say about that is about time.
I agree.
What did he host it before? Was it the Emmys or the Tonys?
The Emmys and the Tonys.
It was the Emmys. I think he did both.
Yeah, he did both, because it was the only time I ever watched the Tonys, because he hosted... And then Book of Mormon was up for, like, every Tony, and it won. So that's why only reason I watched it that year. Jonathan, do you want to get us started on the DC talk?
Sometime this week, DC released their big plans to combat Marvel, and they've got a whole big lineup. I believe it's 10 films set up until 2020. And I wrote the news piece and had a timeline for also Marvel's in comparison. And it's a lot. They've got these huge plans, and they also let slip in that Ezra Miller, is that how you pronounce his name?
Yep.
Is the Flash. So, from my point of view, I think they're in way over their head, but what do you guys think?
Well, David Ayer is actually directing one of them. Fun Which fact. One? Transition. He's Suicide Clamp.
Oh, the Suicide Squad?
Yes. Yeah, I noticed that he's directing that one.
I'm excited to see Ezra Miller in a big movie like that. I don't really see him as Barry Allen. A friend of mine made a good point that it's like they're clearly going for the dark and brooding, because if you've seen Ezra Miller's brilliant work in Perks of Being a Wallflower and We Need to Talk About Kevin, you'll know the type of actor that he is.
I really like him. I think Jonathan was about to say this, but he is also my favorite in Perks of Being a Wallflower.
He's great in that movie, but he's even more amazing and terrifying in We Need to Talk About Kevin, which, if you guys haven't seen or our listeners haven't seen, I highly recommend that movie.
I haven't seen it, and I've heard mixed things.
Oof, it's great. It's great. But that's just my take.
I haven't seen it yet. Is it on Netflix?
It was at one point. I don't know if it still is. I'll have to look.
That's John C. Reilly, right?
Yeah, John C. Reilly and Tilda Swinton. Yeah, it's a Lynn Ramsey movie. It's excellent. And then speaking of Marvel, they dropped a little bit of news that sounded really interesting, or at least kind of blew DC's out of the water, I thought anyway, that for Captain America 3, that Iron Man is going to be co-billed with Captain America, which means that they're leading into doing the Civil War storyline. I don't know. What are you guys' thoughts on that?
It says they've got a lot more planned than initially expected. I think before this news, I thought Avengers 3 is like their final thing. That's when they'll reset everybody.
Yep.
But this kind of says, and I think I heard rumors already, something about Avengers 4. And I think after the success of Guardians, they can see that they can probably churn out a trilogy with just those characters before they really throw them into this whole Avengers thing.
Right.
And it when you put it all together, it really will it'll help tie things up, because that's going to be Chris Evans out of the franchise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he wants out, I think, more than anybody.
It's fine. Like, it works too. It gives them some extra time to build up Bucky, who will replace him.
Who's signed like a 9-picture deal, so we all know he's going to take over for him at some point. But yeah, and then I believe, which I thought this was interesting, because I thought Joss Whedon was definitely doing Avengers 3, that he is not going to do it, but that the Russo brothers are in talk to do Avengers 3 and 4.
Yeah.
Along with Cap 3. Yeah. So that's interesting. They're going to keep going with that. And then Robert Downey Jr. talked about a potential of an Iron Man 4 if Mel Gibson directed it, which is insane because that will never happen. But I don't know. I don't really want to see an Iron Man 4, personal opinion. But after I saw The Judge, maybe he should do it. That's right, guys. I'm still starting a beef with The Judge. It's still going.
I just think the arc of that character is done.
I feel like it you know, it fit nicely with Iron Man 3. You know, he got his little circular thing removed out of his chest. Spoiler alert for people who haven't seen Iron Man 3. So, but oh well. I mean, that movie grossed $1 billion. So who hasn't seen it yet?
And this role in Cap 3 gives him more to work with. He'd mm-hmm. be more portrayed as a villain,
which is awesome.
I assume, since we're seeing this movie from Cap's perspective.
Yeah, definitely. He's going to be more the villain of it, which I like. That's probably one of my favorite comic storylines, is the Civil War. So I'm glad that they're going that route. It has me more excited, someone who's maybe been a little fatigued to these movies. So like, I'm going to see him, like, sure.
And it gives another reason to add some like backing to those Spider-Man rumors, because Spider-Man plays a big role in that storyline, from what I remember.
Right. Yes. Absolutely. So it may be happening. Big news happening. So yeah, DC's got its work cut out for them. I just cannot drum up enough excitement. Like, I can't drum up any excitement for what DC has planned, to be honest. I just can't.
Yeah, unless they say Idris Elba's Green Lantern, then I don't care. That's all I want. That's all I've ever wanted. I'll never get it.
They just don't have a good visionary spearheading that thing. You know, they have Kevin Feige over at Marvel, and then they have, like, Joss Whedon and the Russo brothers. And DC just has Zack Snyder. And I'm like, that's not... That's not.
And now David Ayer.
David Ayer, which, you know, has me more excited. Like, I'm more excited for that property that I've never heard of than I am Batman versus Superman.
I've never heard of it either. I was like, what's this? I like the title of whatever they are.
It's like a little team. I think it'd be something to combat Guardians. Harley Quinn is in it.
Oh,
like major character.
I like that. I like that for sure.
Like I'm saying, this seems like they're way in over their head. That's a lot of things to try and do.
They're ambitious, but...
Or maybe their ambition is awesome, and it'll just work with some movies and not work with others, like Man of Steel.
It might happen, but I hope. Yeah.
It won't work with anything that Zack Snyder is involved in.
Yep. Yeah.
That's true, but at least...
I'm outside that.
Batman vs. Superman at least has Ben Affleck, so you got that going for it, so.
But, I mean, aside from movies he's been in, and Gone Girl, and, like you said, Kevin Smith movies, Ben Affleck isn't not my favorite actor.
No, he isn't. I mean, I like the guy. He's great, but, yeah, he's not the best actor. It's like you have his movies, and Kevin Smith's movies, and Reindeer Games. I don't know why that laugh was really funny. Oh god, anything else you guys want to touch on before we wrap her up?
Actually I think the HBO news that dropped this week,
yes, is thank probably, you I forgot about
probably
that.
The most important thing.
So HBO is finally cutting the cord, which we all knew would probably happen at some point, but they're going to have a new streaming service that you can just order without having an HBO subscription.
Yeah, and with a lot of the net neutrality stuff that's been going on, and how cable companies have been portrayed as like the big corporate evil as of late, this is a huge step.
It's a big step, and I love it. Like, sorry, I don't mean to step on you, but, like, I think it's amazing that they're doing that. Because, like, especially with Comcast and Time Warner talking about merging, like, that's evil. That's, like, they can really price gouge if they do that. So
yeah, they'll have, like, over 80% of the entire nation.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, already, I don't know about you guys, but, like, I have not had cable in years. Like, I've just done Netflix and Hulu Plus, and then this HBO will be one more step. Like, I will get that when that comes out, for sure.
No, yeah, I think that is the future. That's what people will do. I think after HBO does it, the only thing that would be holding people back is ESPN.
Yeah.
I think that's the only thing.
I disagree. I think the only thing holding people back will be, like, Scripps networks, like Food Network. Because I hear a lot of people, because that's, like, you can't get it on, I mean, you can get some episodes on Netflix now, but still, like, HGTV, Food Network, and Travel Channel are some of the biggest cable channels.
That's true. That's fair enough. And then plus, like, you know, like, AMC isn't on any of the big, like, their shows are on Netflix after the fact, but, like, they're not on Hulu Plus week to week, so, like, you know, big shows like Walking Dead will be hard for people to watch, I mean, unless they do it illegally.
Which
is what people have been doing with Game of Thrones.
Yeah, isn't Game of Thrones the most pirated show?
Yeah.
Yeah. And Walking Dead's probably second, I'm going to assume.
I hope not.
Different quality.
Yeah, I mean, it is different quality, but I mean, they're still the two most popular shows on TV.
Yeah,
that's what I mean. I'm not comparing the two shows, so
I know that's why I said I hope not.
I'm struggling through season 4 right now. I'm only on episode 6, so I'm like, it's a slog.
Wait, have you reached the halfway point yet?
No.
The one good episode of that season.
Well, actually, to me, it started strong, and then, like, they started doing, like, things that broke characters, and now they're all split up, and, like, sorry, this is spoiling, but it's on Netflix, so people can watch it. I'm just like,
But, I mean, that plotline is exactly how this story just progresses.
Right. That makes sense. Yeah, so I'm not to the halfway point yet. I'm almost there. I'm on the episode, the Governor's standalone episode right now.
Okay. Oh, yeah, that was a decent one.
See, yeah. That's what I don't understand. I've never heard anyone like, yeah, this episode was great. It's always like, I don't know, it was okay. I'm already in season 4. I can't stop.
There's been a few episodes I would say that are great. It's the most frustrating show on TV because it's not like a terrible dismissive show, like a terrible sitcom like Last Man Standing or like Dads or something like that. Because it's like that's a bad comparison, but like it's a cinematic show. It's just like the writing is so inconsistent that it's just like there's episodes where you love and there's episodes where you want to throw your remote at the TV.
Yeah, I definitely watched the first episode and never looked back, and I don't regret it.
The first season's probably the weakest one, I would say.
I know, I'm not willing to sit through it.
Fair enough.
Like, I watched the first episode, I was like, no thanks.
That's fair.
I'm zombied out anyway.
I've already stated multiple times, I believe, on this podcast that I don't have time for an hour-long show, especially one that's not great.
I watch X-Files.
You watching X-Files?
I'll just watch X-Files instead. It's better.
Because aliens?
They don't exist.
Oh, boy. So anyway, I would say that concludes our 29th episode of the Gotcha Movies podcast. As always, you can check out our news, reviews, and this podcast at gotchamovies.com. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Gotcha Movies. This podcast is also on iTunes, so be sure to subscribe to us there. If you are so inclined, leave a comment or rating. It helps us know what we are doing right and what we can improve on. If you like this podcast, you can check out the other podcasts that I co-host, Over Under Movies, with Octay Ege-Kozak and Eric McClanahan, where we pick one overrated movie and one underrated movie and discuss them. But before we sign off, thank you guys for logging on this afternoon and recording. This is definitely the highlight of my weekend, every weekend.
Yeah. Thanks, Ryan.
Yeah, you're welcome. Aw, you're welcome. No, really, I'm being truthful. So, yeah, be sure to check back next week for our reviews of... What are we reviewing next week? John Wick? Yeah, let's go with that. John Wick. End our Halloween episode.